There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 722, March 20th, 2017. Nasser?
Thank you very much, sir. Hello to all F1 Weekly Familia members from the sunny side of the East Coast.
Welcome, Nas. Of course, Nasser is going to be bringing us his full report on the IndyCar season opener and the 12 hours of Sebring. Will Fernando freak out on Honda on the first race? Will Horner...
Honda. Did Hyundai and Honda merge?
Yes, they're trying to fix that problem, Nasser. Keep up the good work. And, of course, Horner could freak out on Renault. Can Bottas beat LCH? A lot of things happening in Australia because it's only a week away. And, of course, on this edition of F1Weekly.com, we've got an interview with IndyCar team owner Dale Coyne. Nas, welcome to the studio. How are you?
I am doing real good, like flowing the progressive ads. And I think we are now in good hands, as next time we chat, we will be talking about the, post-2017 Australian Grand Prix, and that is long awaited and looking really, really forward to it.
No, me too. I can't wait to hear how many times Fernando Alonso is going to go, GP2 engine, It's so exciting, but apparently, really for me, the big story is the failure for Honda to perform.
Yes. They don't have a failure to communicate. They have a failure to deliver.
Exactly. And the communication is going to be out of control. I mean, let me put it this way. The team, McLaren himself, the team, they went out and talked to Mercedes and made sure that everybody knew about it. That made Fernando's GP2 little quote meaningless.
Well, you know, the two-season-long coming into third-season honeymoon may be over soon with Alonso declaring this is heavy-duty, more heavy-duty than GP2 engine, declaring that McLaren's only problem is Honda, and Eric Bouye claiming they would be winning races with Mercedes. This partnership may not survive beyond 2017. And everybody is now pissing on Honda. DC, David Coulthard, ex-Grand Prix driver for McLaren, said it best about Honda, and I quote, "Nobody is interested in their excuses," end of quote. And time will tell if Honda can provide an engine that is both competitive and reliable by the time of the European leg of the season. Till then, McLaren will continue to suffer on crutches.
Indeed. Now, quickly, I want to mention, of course, our condolences to the Surtees family. The last podcast was a standalone John Surtees interview that you did in 2016 along with Peter Brazier, which was an outstanding interview. And of course, we put that interview in its entirety on podcast number 721. Your thoughts on the passing of this legend?
Something like this is always very sad, and you think about all the great achievements the man had. So it was very sad indeed. And, you know, like you mentioned, it was only last June that Mr. Brazier and I met him at his office in Edenbridge. And he looked in good shape and was in very good mood. And I remember as we were leaving, he asked me, was it all good? And I said, no, it was very good. He was very happy. And, of course, you know, Mr. Brazier and I also were very happy and deeply honored to have the privilege of sitting down. And, you know, also our request was like for a 20-30 minute time slot with him. And it was almost an hour, and he had some paintings. We talked about that. As soon as you enter his office, you know, there was a picture of him in a Can-Am car at Riverside. So we talked about that, Laguna Seca, and, you know, if you remember, he also ran Team GB in A1GP, so we talked about that. Well, you know, all good things, you know, we all have to go, but this was very sad. John was 83 years old, and what a life, you know, world champion on two wheels many times, world champion on four wheels with Ferrari, and after getting out of the cockpit, he managed his own F1 team and also built F2 cars.
Yeah. No, and that's why you're always on these missions to get these interviews, because you never know when someone will pass.
Yeah, you know, like Gerard Ducarouge passed away. He worked with Lotus at... he worked with Senna at Lotus, somebody I really wanted to meet, but he's gone. You remember your homeboy, Johnny Savoie-Gavin, Metra driver. He's gone. So, you know, we're trying to catch up to as many as we can before we kick the bucket.
Exactly, Nasser. Keep up the good work. So let's continue. McLaren is going to be a disaster, and we'll see how Fernando handles it, because this is the end of Fernando's contract, and Bottas only signed a one-year contract. Can you read between the lines, Nasser?
Read between the Finnish tea leaves? I wonder if they even have tea leaves in Finlandia.
I don't know, but it's interesting. We have an interesting 2017 season, and it could be disaster. And the irony for me is, if Fernando leaves Honda and then Honda begins to win, is it the curse?
I don't think they can. I mean, if you are 2 seconds behind, maybe in a season you can catch up 1.5, like they caught up from 4 seconds to 2 seconds. I don't think you're going to, especially with new regulations and a lack of testing, I don't think they can go down, come from 1.5 seconds behind of Mercedes and Ferrari and then be 0.5 second quicker in from one season to another. I don't think that's happening. And as much as I would like to see Honda, as much as I am a fan of Honda and their racing history, I just don't see this thing turning around very quickly.
Neither does McLaren.
Yeah, so I will not be surprised. I mean, to wait for 5 years for an engine to become competitive, I mean, everybody else would be on a different plateau by then.
I agree. But still, it took Red Bull a little while after Jaguar was purchased.
Yeah, I mean, look at Michael Schumacher at Ferrari. It was in his, I think, fifth year that he won his first championship with them. So even if you have FedEx sponsorship, success doesn't come next day.
That's very, very true. But at least we do have Albert Park coming up next weekend, Nasser.
Well, you know, the wind of regime change is blowing Ferrari's way, but I think we may still have a silver lining in land down under. For sure it will signal a great season if LCH is third man on the podium behind two red cars. That will really rattle the cage of Toto and Niki. And if both Seb and Kimi finish ahead of two Mercedes drivers, then it will be proof positive that their preseason testing pace was real. But still, you know, it's a long season, and I think it's going to be a very good and exciting season.
Absolutely. The cars look beefy. There are some issues with the beauty of the cars, but at least they're wider and more machismo.
Yeah, I love the lower rear wing. I do not like these sharp fins at all. But you mentioned Bottas. You know, he may take a conservative approach and not try to win over LCH on the first corner of the first lap. And this may allow LCH not to worry about cage rattling from within the team and focus on competition from Ferrari and Red Bull. Now, maybe, this is just a maybe, Bottas will do what Mika Hakkinen and Eddie Irvine did, outqualify his highness in his first race together as teammates. Because, you know, Mika Hakkinen, first race with McLaren, he outqualified Senna. Eddie Irvine, in his first race with Ferrari, outqualified Michael Schumacher.
Exciting. At least Mika Hakkinen won a world championship.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And he's back at McLaren.
As an ambassador, he's been there for a long time. So looks like he is, if he's back at McLaren, looks like he is not in the camp of Ron Dennis and probably more in the camp of Mansoor Özil.
Very true, very true, very true.
What say you about Red Bull?
Well, you know, it's hard to tell. It's really, really hard to tell. Renault says they're on par with Ferrari. It looks like they have the reliability. Verstappen was often, maybe not first, but second on the timesheets during testing. So they look great. They smell great. They sound great. We'll see when we get to Albert Park. I'm assuming that they're going to be pretty close to Ferrari. And if they're close to Ferrari, they'll be close to Mercedes. So I think, that's the top three right there. Mercedes, Ferrari, Red Bull, Renault.
Yeah, according to Christian Horner, Red Bull has the best driver pairing, and it's hard to argue against that. And I do expect either Danny Boy or Max V on the podium. This race winner, I think, will come from one of the teams you mentioned.
That's for sure. I agree. Not Fernando.
Do you think at this stage there is a clear favorite for the championship?
Well, I think our favorites for the championship are three people.
Alonso.
Exactly. You read my book.
Yes.
Fantastic.
Now, there are some interesting lineups in other teams. Williams, for example. Felipe Massa has retired from retirement and is back for more with 18-year-old rookie Lance as teammate. F1 debut in the park will be no stroll for him, especially given the challenges and crashes he suffered, not only in pre-season testing, but also in his rookie F3 season, which was very quick but very wild at times. Will be great if they can be fighting for the podium, they meaning the Williams team, on a regular basis, but I think they are not there yet. And, they have just recruited Petty Lowe, so I do expect them to keep moving up as the season moves on.
Yes, I think Petty Lowe is a great acquisition, and I think this is going to get them somewhat reorganized. And Stroll has to, he's got to beat Felipe Massa, the old man of the sea.
It's not going to be easy, in his first year in F3, Lance Stroll had experience of racing in Italian Formula 4, the New Zealand Racing Series, which is 15 races in 5 weekends, also raced in the Florida one time only Ferrari, junior racing series they had started. So he had quite a bit of racing pedigree and experience. When he got into the European F3, his fellow rookie was Max Verstappen, and that kid won 6 races in a row, a total of 7 races, and look where he is today. So I think Lance is very quick. He is quick, there's no question about him. I saw him win the Vegas go-kart race, and there's a lot of international competition there, and he was, hustling the guy who was leading all race long and then passed him. So he's quick, but I think he needs to just cool down and see, he doesn't have to worry about sponsorship running out. So he can just take it easy, chill out, and then try to max out maybe next year.
Yeah, I agree. I think Williams will continue to take steps forward because they really need to, period.
Okay, what do you think of the Pink Panther of motor racing this season, Force India?
I like the color. I think it's great. It's unique. It looks good. It suits the car. I think they still have a good Mercedes package. These guys should be up there. I think they'll be on the podium. I think Sergio Perez will prove himself.
He's done all that already quite a few times. But, since they are the Pink Panther team, do you think Vijay Mallya, who is wanted by the Indian authorities and actually even asked the Interpol for a warrant for his arrest, do you think he could become the Inspector Cruzo of motor racing?
He could be. And the next time he gets a hotel room, he's going to go like this. I want a room.
There you go.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
He doesn't go for a hotel. He owns quite a few.
I understand, but he's in, he's being sneakier now.
Well, he has to be because, if he lands in a place where they don't have a, where they have an extradition treaty with India, he could be in some deep Mangalassi.
Not only that, but if you listen to the Motel 6 advertisements, it's Vijay Mallya that says, "We'll leave the light on for you."
Oh yeah, absolutely. Now, his teammate is Esteban Ocon, your homeboy. And this kid, I'm a big fan of of this kid, also of Max. He is yet another proof you can arrive in Formula One based on pure natural talent and no family or national oil company money. So it's Force India would be a team a lot of people would be paying attention to.
Absolutely. I expect Esteban Ocon to make France proud.
Yeah, and do you remember Sissy Physico's pole at Spa?
Oh, yeah, so exciting.
Yeah, and that's the closest Force India came to winning. I think he was second to Raikkonen in that race. And we have not had a Mexican driver won a Grand Prix, which was also at Spa way back, you know, in the 70 or 71 with Pedro Rodriguez. So that's why, you know, when Sergio came so close to winning the Grand Prix in Malaysia some years ago, I was really, really hoping for him to pull it off. It would have been good for our amigos south of the border.
Oh, it would have. And the in-flight burrito would have been even that better.
Oh, absolutely. They would be distributing. You know what? That's what we should do, Clark, one of these days when we go to the... We leave the hot dog stand we talk about when we go to Daytona 24 hours. But when you go to the U.S. Grand Prix, maybe we can dish out some free burritos to F1 Weekly familia.
That's a good idea. Keep up the good work, Nas.
And of course, we must talk about your favorite team, Renault.
Yep. So exciting, but no Flavio.
Yeah, he's gone. But and you know, even without Flavio, there has been management shakeup. Frederick Vasseur, boss of ART Grand Prix team in GP2, GP3, has already departed before the season started. And he was the reason, I would say the main reason for Hülkenberg joining Renault, because he lobbied for Nico to come to the team very hard. And both of them were very successful in F3 and GP2 together. Despite all his triumphs in junior Formula and pole position at Interlagos some years ago, Nico is still looking for his first podium in the top tier, which is a very surprising thing given his talent and racing achievements down in junior series. He should have the upper hand on second-year driver Julian Palmer. Both won GP2 titles, Julian in his fourth year and Nico in his first year. And Renault may not be a big... I don't think they will be a major threat this season, but with full blessings of the top brass of the company, they have the potential to be a top contender in the near future. In the past year, they have brought in quite a few people, and given the pace of their power plant at Red Bull last season, all they need is the good chassis to make things happen, things and wins happen. Do you think they'll win a race this year?
No, I don't think they're going to win a race, but I think they're going to get a lot of points. And Nico Hülkenberg is a good addition to that team. They needed a leader, as Kimi Raikkonen was to Lotus Renault.
Yes, but they need to pay their leader, you know. That leader was not paid anything.
Well, that was because of... That wasn't Renault, that was Lotus.
Jenny.
Thank you.
Jenny. Okay, Haas F1, U.S. team. First season was a pleasant surprise, especially in the early races. Amazingly, the team is... You know, I don't know. Maybe they have hired Rubens Barrichello in the background. They are still working to resolve their brake issues from last year. And hopefully, Gunther Steiner will have a more cordial and productive relationship with his number two, Kevin Magnussen, than he had with Esteban Gutierrez. I don't think victory will happen this year, but it will be nice if both Romain Grosjean and Magnussen can make podium appearances, especially when Mercedes teammates or Max and company play Let's Get Physical. How do you think they will do?
I think they'll do just as well as they did this season, but they're not going to fade as fast as they did in 2016. You know, they came out of the box really looking pretty good. Romain Grosjean doing an outstanding job, but the brake issues really haunted them, and they started falling behind. So I think they're going to solve those problems, and I think they're going to be fairly competitive. The Ferrari package looks good, and let's face it, they are a Ferrari kind of a team.
Yes. At least the good thing is with their team, with their drivers, there's no political issue. And that is one really good thing if you have Kimi Raikkonen in your team. You know he's not going to stir the pot.
And not only that, but Kevin Magnussen needs to prove himself one more time. Hello?
Yes, I'm here, sir.
I heard something explode.
No, I'm just exploding with the excitement for the F1 season.
That's fantastic, Nas. Keep up the good work, and please continue.
Okay, Toro Rosso. Best livery in town, and France Toss is all peaches and herbs. on being reunited and feeling so good with Renault engine. Since both Red Bull teams are now equipped with the same Renault engine, it will be hard for the little team, born from the ashes of Minardi, to rattle the cage of mothership. But regular top 10 finishes with the occasional top 5 finishes should not be too much to ask. And I think the key here will be, sir, who will avoid Dr. Marco's machete towards the end of the season? This will be Kvyat's fourth season in F1 as a Red Bull driver, and third for Carlos Sainz Jr., also known as Carlito. So I think it's Kvyat. If Kvyat does not dominate Carlito, I think they will say to him, Das Vidania.
I agree. Not only that, but how well they use the Renault package. They looked okay in testing. There was a few hiccups, but in the end, if the Renault package is as good as everybody thinks it is, it's going to be a great season for moi.
Yes, I certainly hope so. And you know, when Carlos Sainz Jr. was teammate to Max Verstappen, all the talk was Max V, but if you look at the timing and performance, Carlos Sainz Jr. was right there with him.
I agree. Carlito has actually done a fantastic job.
Yeah, and you know, we've done interviews with him a few times. Very nice kid, and I have to meet him while he's a Formula One driver to see if he has changed. Okay, Bernie is not feeling the liberty. According to a story on Daily Mail of UK, Bernie is claiming that he wanted to stay yet another year at the top of Formula One management, and that Liberty Media wants to erase him from history books. According to him, the staff has been told not to talk to him. On Liberty's idea of making F1 more open and accessible, which you know people like you and I would want very much, this is what Bernie said, and I quote, "They have an American culture, and at an American race, everyone is in the paddock and the pits. In F1, we have been running a 5-star Michelin restaurant, not a hamburger joint," end of quote. Now, my two quids on this are, first, welcome to the world of corporate America, Mr. Ecclestone. He is lucky the Western Union man did not chase him down in Knightsbridge with the message, "Your services are no longer required." And talking of hamburger joints, at least from personal experience and preference, the coffee and French fries are the best under the golden arches.
Not only that, Nasser, but when you go to a McDonald's and look at the sign, at this moment today, it says 99 billion served.
Yeah, I remember when they had like 45 billion served, Johnny Carson made a joke that means 5 pounds of beef.
But in the end, it's about making money. Liberty Media wants to open up the pits and paddock, bring in the burgers, and you know what? They're going to be successful, and they're going to make money. You don't need a Michelin star, because Michelin stars are just for the frou-frou. They want six-pack Johnny.
Yes. The thing is, you know, I mean, for me, going to Sebring and Daytona 24 hours last 2 years, and also St. Petersburg race, St. Petersburg IndyCar race, one of the best things is you have so much access to drivers, and, you know, you see all these dads with their young kid, 5 years, 6 year old, holding a pen and a magazine, trying to get an autograph, and, you know, drivers come and sign. So it's a good feeling. It's a good atmosphere, you know. I mean, you know, I remember you and I went to all the U.S. Grand Prix at Indianapolis. I mean, I never saw Michael Schumacher without his helmet on. You know, all you see him is when he's on the track. Now, unless your daddy is chief executive officer at GE or IBM, then you can, you know, go and mingle with these guys for 5 minutes. But like you said, the Joe Sixpack does not come from their background.
That's very, very true. But I have to admit that if you got up early, I did run into Michael Schumacher on the backside of Indianapolis. And I briefly spoke with Ross Brawn, and he signed a pack of Marlboro Reds for me.
Yeah, but you know, they were there, made themselves available because of your charisma.
Exactly. I was just going to say, I did have that F1 Weekly deep dish mirror look.
Absolutely, and why not? Okay, Paddy Lowe is now in the house of Williams. Paddy Lowe started in Formula One at Williams, so he's going back home. This is interesting. Niki Lauda and Toto Wolff push Ross Brawn out of Mercedes F1 team to bring in Lowe from McLaren. And this is from Ross Brawn's own interview and podcast on another network. where he says that Patty Lowe was brought in without Ross Brawn even being informed of this was happening. And, you know, both have moved on to bigger and better things. And Lowe is now replacing Pat Simmons at Williams as chief technical officer and also a board member.
I think it's great. I'm happy. I mean, I'm a big Pat Simmons fan, obviously. But we'll see what happens. Patty Lowe, he's not the most beautiful person to look at, but he certainly has talent.
Wow. Oh, boy, that's pretty interesting.
You think so?
Now, let me ask you a question. You're saying Pat Simmons is, you're a big fan. Has that something to do with a race in Singapore?
It could be something about a race and a junior achiever.
Yes.
Bravo.
That's classic, man. That was, I remember watching that race live, and I just with my friends, you know, it just looked way too convenient. We had no proof, so we couldn't say anything, but it was just way, way too convenient for somebody to come in on lap 12.
But let's not forget whose idea it was.
Well, you know, Nelsinho says it was Flavio. Flavio says, I know nothing about it. It's finger-pointing. We may never know this.
We will, once you get that Flavio interview.
Yeah, I cannot interview him if he's in his mankini. That will be too much for me to handle.
Don't worry, we'll have a no-mankini clause in your future contract, Nasser.
There you go. Shall we take a break and do the Mondial when we come back?
That's a really good idea, Nasser. I was just getting a little thirsty, so we'll be back.
And let me give a plug to our unofficial sponsor. I am today enjoying our favorite Gatorade, lime and Nahrain Kartikeyan flavor.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful, Nas. Now, we'll take a break and we'll be back after a couple of messages. Thank you.
Thinking of a career in Formula One? Already have a motorsports job, but thinking about jumping into F1? Our team at Motorsports Career Advisor recently finalized the results of our interviews with several top motorsports recruiters and has compiled them into our 2017 Motorsports Resource Guide called The Number One Recruiter-Tested Method to Landing the Interview for Your Dream Job in F1. If you've heard our radio spots before, maybe you don't know that up to 1,000 action-oriented motorsports enthusiasts contact us every month to get our guides. But it was our motorsports recruiter partners that challenged us to go even further. And here's what they convinced us to do. For a limited time, we're giving away a pre-release sample of our 2017 resource guide, The Number One Recruiter-Tested Method to Landing the Interview for Your Dream Job in F1. Get yours now at F1RecruiterTestedMethod.com. F1 is extremely competitive. Be the first to see the guide and jump ahead of your job competition. Go to F1RecruiterTestedMethod.com now for the 2017 pre-release before the countdown expires, and you'll get a sneak peek at a guide that others will soon pay to receive. That's F1RecruiterTestedMethod.com.
Honesty is something we all look for, especially when it comes to auto service. Honest Engines Auto Service Tallahassee is where you'll find it. Since 2005, they've been delivering trusted, dependable service to Florida's capital. Honest Engines is your full-service auto repair center. Bumper to bumper, they have you covered. Honest Engines Auto Repair offers a variety of services. Transmission repair, oil change service, and much, much more. Don't let just anyone work on your car. Bring it to Honest Engines. They'll give your baby the care it deserves. They work closely with you to make sure you know what's being done. With Honest Engines, you don't have to guess what their team is doing. Their highly experienced and certified technicians know just what your car needs, and they'll make sure you do too. So if you're in the Tallahassee area and you need auto repairs, give Honest Engines a call. 850-421-8461. And tell them F1Weekly.com sent you. Honest Engines Auto Repair. Right on the corner, right on the price. 718 Gay Street, Tallahassee.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the guru himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. And today we shall, you know, I tell you, Clark, I'm feeling very, very good these days. IndyCar season is on. Sports car racing in this country has merged. It's on. We've already had a couple of races in Formula E. Dakar is behind us. Daytona 500 was a great finish, as always. And now we have creme de la creme next weekend in Australia. So anyway, let's talk a little bit about the IndyCar, which has already started season, as I mentioned. I was at the Firestone St. Petersburg Grand Prix. Great experience like last year. The location is right by the Salvador Dali Museum and only a 20-minute drive from my home, which was very, very convenient. And it was very good to catch up with our longtime listener, one of the originals, Christopher D. Hardy. And in the next few weeks, we will present our conversation with him. Today, we will present a conversation with longtime IndyCar team owner Dale Coyne a little bit later. And he is Mr. Minardi of IndyCar Racing. In the next few podcasts, we will also have interviews with Mikhail Aleshin. Some years ago, he won the World Series by Renault over Daniel Ricciardo. It was done in a pretty impressive style. I remember watching the race on the web. It was raining and Daniel was leading, and then Mikhail, you know, chased him down and passed him. So that was a great win for him. You will like this, sir. We also had a chat with a couple of Indy Lights drivers. One of them is Nico Jamin. And he says to me, you're the first person here who can pronounce my name correctly. You know, here he goes by Nico Jamin. But, you know, Jamin, Jamin, whatever. Interestingly, he's from Rouen. And you have been to that town, right?
Of course. My mom used to get her shoes made there.
Yeah, I have never been there, but it might change this May, hopefully. And this is, of course, where they used to hold the French Grand Prix, and this is the place where Dan Gurney gave Brabham team their first ever Grand Prix victory. An American driver, Aaron Tielitz, he is from a small town in Wisconsin where the population is about 500 people. I had an opportunity to talk with his older brother and father also. Aaron won the opening race of the season in dominating fashion and led from start to finish. And I'll tell you something, Clark. I've watched a lot of IndyCar races, you know, just as a sideshow. And this time I paid some attention because you're going to interview a couple of these drivers. And these lights cars are very fast on a straight. I was very impressed. So if you get a chance to check them out at Sears Point or whatever they're calling the track these days, please do so. Now let's take a look at the IndyCar results from St. Pete. Sebastian Bourdais, your homeboy, was the winner for Dale Coyne Racing. So a great start to the season for the big little team. Bourdais, this is very impressive. With 36 IndyCar wins, is now sixth in the all-time wins list, one more than Bobby Unser. Very impressive career Bourdais is having on this side of the pond. And you know, he lives in St. Petersburg.
Well, not only that, but you know, he crashed the car the previous day.
Yes.
Had to start last, but it was all team strategy, and the team, Dale Coyne, did a fantastic job, and he won this Grand Prix. This was a Cinderella story.
Yeah, it was very impressive, and you know, with the new rules, if you crash or you cause an accident, then you cannot take, you know, you cannot take part in further proceedings that day. So he started from the back and came all the way to win. To beating Penske's, the Ganassi's, and Michael Andretti team for a small operation from out of Illinois. This is very, very impressive. Okay, second was, and even more good news for you, second was another French driver, Simon Pagenaud for Penske Racing with Chevy Power. Third was Scott Dixon from New Zealand for Chip Ganassi Racing. They have switched from Chevy to Honda this season. And a positive note for Honda Motorsports, Bourdais was powered by Honda. In fact, seven of the top 10 finishes were Honda-powered cars, very different from their performance last season when Chevy had the upper hand. Moving on to Indy Lights, both races were won by, and these two young youths are getting a lot of press, very, very rightly so. Both races were won by young American drivers, race one by Aaron Tielitz, as mentioned earlier, and second race was won by Brian Herta's 16-year-old son, Colton Herta. Past two seasons, he raced in Europe and was pretty quick and won races. I think moving back to U.S. racing is a smart move for him. And we interviewed him when he was in the British Formula MSA Series, which is now the British Formula 4. And hopefully I'll go to another race, IndyCar race, in the near future, and we'll do a catch-up interview with him. Okay, now, sir, here is the big deal of the weekend, past two weekends. Yours truly, thanks to yours truly and the fine folks at the media center of Sebring 12 Hours. This was a great experience to go there with Media Pass. about 2 hours from Tampa, and of course a very historical place, home of the first ever U.S. Grand Prix way back in 1959. The race this past weekend was won by the Cadillac of Wayne Taylor Racing with two of his sons driving, Ricky and Jordan, along with English driver Alex Lynn. Cadillac cars also finished second and third. And this is very good. You know, that's why I want different teams to win, so the manufacturers stay in the sport and throw some money and make the sport bigger and better. So the moral of the podcast is, of this podcast, I should say, if you get a chance, please check out any of these Florida events. Daytona 24 Hours, Sebring 12 Hours, and the St. Pete IndyCar Race. As delicious as the Florida Fresh OJ.
Very nice, Ness. I'm glad those races all worked out for you. I was really happy that both IndyCar Series and Sebring allowed us to attend. We thank them, of course.
Absolutely.
And obviously, these were very fruitful races for F1 Weekly interviews, which is what we are known for. So keep up the good work, Nasser. Of course, the check is in the mail.
Yes.
So we're pretty pumped up about that, Ness.
I got a telex from my local Pony Express station saying something big is coming your way. But going back to Sebring, you know, I had to work on Friday, so I could not go there on Friday. But we have a real doozy for our listeners. A very nice conversation with Nick Heidfeld.
Nick Heidfeld. Boy, oh boy, oh boy. Does he say nice things about Kimi or not? That is the question.
No. He's yes, he does. And I asked him about what you were referring to being passed by Mercedes. So he talked about discussing that with Norbert Hogg. He talks about he has a very high opinion of Ron Dennis because he was a test driver for McLaren. Even though, like he said, they didn't take him. So, you know, but these things happen. But he has a very good positive outlook and discuss other things also, you know. Remember when Kubica won, he had a chance to win that race also? Do you remember?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so there were a couple of questions where I took the fifth, you know, and I can understand that. But I think our listeners will really enjoy this conversation. We touched on a lot of things, and he was very nice and polite and, cooperative. Normally, what really sets the tone, you know, when you go up like a walk-in sort of interview and you ask them, can you do an interview? And they say, if they say, who is it for? Very rarely do I get an interview if that's the question. And if they say, oh, yeah, I have a seat, or yeah, how much time do you need? Then you know it's going to happen. So game plan, sir, now is that we are back in business, and hopefully I'll go to some other races, and we'll bring a lot of interviews.
Okay, speaking of interviews, Nass, why don't we go ahead and give our listeners an introduction to the Dale Coyne interview.
Yes, sir. Dale Coyne, he is from a small town in Illinois, and what happened, his town is not too far from Road America, so when he was in college, he went there, and I'll let him describe what happened there. And that's where he picked up the interest there, and he raced for many years. I remember when he was racing, normally, most of the time, with a stock block Chevy engine, and so he raced there as a driver. Then he has been in team ownership for a long, long time, and this late, Justin Wilson won some races for him. Bordy had driven for him in the past also, so it's a happy reunion with Bordy. And what they're really happy about, Dale Coyne, his team, and also especially Bordy. Remember when he was having unbelievable success with Newman Haas Racing?
Of course.
Nobody could touch him. That was his crew chief was a guy named Craig Hampson. And now he's also with the Coyne and crew chief to Bordy. So everything has come together, and they won the first race, which was very impressive. And there's an interesting story on their second driver also. This really shows how deep we go in motor racing. The driver's name is Ed Jones. He's an English kid. I think he was born and raised, but he has lived most of his life in Dubai. And we interviewed him by Skype when he was, had just left Dubai to race in Europe, or was planning to, because he was the king of the Dubai karting scene. So it's good to see all these young kids, teenagers we interviewed many years ago, some in karting, and now they're in the top level of their chosen profession.
That's fantastic. You know, And all these drivers, these young drivers that we've interviewed over the past decade, you know, if they were all wearing an F1 Weekly sticker, just think how big we would be.
That's very true.
So anyways, that's okay. We don't do it for the glory. We do it for the listeners.
The love, the unconditional love.
Exactly, Nasser. So here we go, Dale Coyne.
Okay, folks, I'm here in St. Petersburg with champion of the little guy, Mr. Dale Coyne. Dale, nice to meet you. How are you today?
Good. We're happy to be here, back racing again this year.
What are your expectations? You have a very great lineup with champion Sebastian Bourdais and a new guy, Ed Jones. What are the preseason expectations?
Well, I think we look to improve quite a bit. I think it's good to have the both drivers done early, which we did. We definitely improved our engineering staff, getting Craig Hampson, who was Sebastian's engineer in all of his years at Newman Haas, has been a coup. That's been good. So I just think it's a lot of work in the off season, and hopefully it pays off here.
Yeah, it'll be great. Now, your place of birth, Minooka, Illinois, is only a few hours away from Road America and Indianapolis Motor Speedway. How important was location in firing up your interest in motor racing?
Well, my interest in motor racing really came at Road America. A bunch of us kids in first year of college, we rented a motorhome and went up there for the weekend. I was sick. I had mono, so I just went up for the June sprints, and I just laid inside sick all weekend until the Formula 5000 cars ran. And I said, oh, those are pretty cool. And 2 years later, I had my first race car, so away we went.
Great. Now, racing fans in our age group fondly remember days of IndyCar racing when multiple Formula One world champions and several auto manufacturers powered the series. With the great divide behind us now, in your opinion and experience, where are we today in terms of capturing the old glory?
Well, I think our racing is very good. I mean, anybody can win. You know, a lot of teams here can win. The cars are pretty much equal. It's what you do with them. Formula One has become a bit of a manufacturer parade. I think our racing is very competitive and very exciting, a very good product on television.
You mentioned Formula One. Do you follow Formula One also?
Yeah, I know we always do. I mean, we're racing, so we follow all racing.
Who do you think will be a champion this year?
Well, I think that's pretty simple to say, but we'll wait and see.
Okay. We keep hearing, apart from Chevy and Honda, there may be a third engine manufacturer in the series soon. Any inside scoop you may provide us?
I don't know. A couple of people looked at us. It'd be good to get somebody in here again, another manufacturer. I think the manufacturers, no matter what the sport, always bring a lot to the table. So I think it'd be very good to have another manufacturer or two.
Now, what we have a situation in the series that top two or three teams have like 60% of the cars. Do you think it's good for the series?
No, I don't. I think, something could happen to any one of those guys, a team owner, or a couple of those guys are getting older. I think it'd be better if we had more all two-car teams. But, you know, thank God they bring a lot to the table, so thank God that they're running four cars. But maybe keep some people away, too. So I think it'd be better if we had all two-car teams.
Now, your team is powered by Honda. If I may ask, the Honda's engine supplies, is it same spec for all the teams they're supplying, or there is a difference in some of the top teams?
No, it's the same spec for all teams. The engines are given out based on whichever engine's next. IndyCar, the series, controls that, so they build an engine. When they build an engine, they don't know which team it's going to go to. So they're giving out in order that they're needed. So I think everybody's got the same engine.
Okay, great. You started out as a driver in this series in 1984. Tell us a little bit about what stages or steps you went through before you got to IndyCars.
Yeah, no, we came up through SCCA. We loved the Formula cars, so we started in Formula Atlantic in Sports Car Club of America, then did Super V, which at the time was like Indy Lights. You know, Michael Andretti and Alan Unser Jr. all came up through Super V. So we did that and then moved into IndyCar. We always seemed to be one budget ahead of where we were. We ran Super V when we had a Formula Ford budget. We ran IndyCar when we had a Super V budget. But thank God we did, because it's worked out in the long run. We're still here.
Great. And good to see your team here because, you know, as I said, you are champion of the little guy. Now, the world has changed, so has motor racing since 1984. In your opinion, is it easier these days when the sport is so businesslike for a young talent to come through the system than in the time you were in?
No, it's harder today. I think everybody's television ratings have gone down, so value to the sponsors have gone down. The cost hasn't gone down. So, you know, before, if everybody had a sponsor, they wouldn't need a driver with money, and talent would rise to the top. And so I think it's, I mean, there's always been some of that, but I think it's harder today. That it's still a matter of talent. You need to be an extreme talent to rise to the top, where before, I think if you were just a good talent, you'd have a shot at maybe rising to the top.
Now, talking of rising talent, Mr. Paul Tracy, I think his first race was with your team. What was your experience in dealing with him, and did you see the talent there?
Yeah, no, we saw talent there right away. I mean, we took him out for his first test, and our tire pyrometer was in a zone it's never been before. He had the tires hotter than anybody's ever driven for us. And I think our first test, we were at Firebird with Danny Sullivan. He was beating him by 2 seconds, and I mean, he was in the Alpha, but still, it was a short little track, so it was more about car handling and driver. So he was a very good driver right out of the gate.
Now, talking of sponsorship, it's always hard, even in good times. In today's atmosphere, if you're trying to raise sponsorship, what would be the, not just you, but any other team, what is the big selling point to get an IndyCar sponsor these days?
I think right now, the fact is that IndyCar is growing. I mean, our television numbers are up every year on year. Our crowds are getting bigger. I mean, we're coming from a low spot compared to NASCAR, so to speak, but our budget requirements are a lot less than NASCAR. And I think we're getting a younger crowd in. I think we're more high tech of a car than stock cars are, for sure. And so I think we're going to continue to get some young fans, and that will help us in a long time.
Okay. Your team has raced in Belgium, Netherlands, and other places mm-hmm. like Australia. Would you like to see overseas races back on schedule, and what markets will you prefer?
Yes, I think whichever does a great race for us. I mean, it's all about anyway. We loved Australia. You know, we had 300,000 or 400,000 people at that race. And, you know, as long as you can get a promoter that can do a race like that, I think that'd be great no matter where it is in the world.
How was the crowd when you went to Europe?
It was a good crowd. It wasn't like Australia. Australia was huge. But it was a good, enthusiastic crowd. And, I mean, we didn't go to marquee places, you know. We went to tracks that were smaller in nature than some of the bigger tracks. But yet we still pulled good crowds at those races.
Okay. Watkins Glen is one of the most famous tracks in the world of racing. How long did the party last after the 2009 race, a first win for your team courtesy of late Justin Wilson?
That was a great event. That was a great race win for us, for Justin. You know, we went to the lodge there where we give the wreath. It's all the Formula One teams used to go to. And it was very enjoyable. We enjoyed that for a long time.
Yeah, unfortunately, we lost Justin Wilson. Talking of, you know, talking about safety, like a cockpit or some other addition to the car to protect the drivers, some don't like it, purists don't like it, some do like it. There's a lot of talk in Formula One about this. What's your take on this?
Well, I can see why there's a push for it from a safety standpoint, but I think it's... I'm not a fan of it. I'm kind of a purist. I don't like it. You know, you don't drive a motorcycle with a cage around you and a bubble around you. You know, It's open wheel racing, open cockpit racing. So, and then the question becomes what other dangers? I mean, I pulled a driver out of a car once. It was upside down burning. I got him out of there in 14 seconds. If there had been a cage, if there had been a bubble in that car, I would never have gotten him out. You know, the visibility, even of a partial thing like they're looking at here, visibility into the mirrors. What do you do on a rainy day? I think there's lots of issues with it that need to be thought of. That yes, it looks like it would be helpful in one situation, but it might be more dangerous in another. So I think a lot more thought needs to go into it before it's implemented.
Okay. Now, talking of tracks, especially in the United States, what tracks are really hard to set up the car?
Most tracks are consistent for the whole track. I mean, they're either bumpy, like Long Beach and Detroit, or they're smooth, like Indy. You know, Pocono is probably the hardest because it's three different corners, three different bankings, three different radiuses. So Pocono as an oval is probably the hardest track to set up for, but you have to make your compromises. So, I mean, every track is different, and, you know, they do some repaving like they've done here at St. Pete. They repave part of the track, so we come back, so it's a little bit different this year with the ride heights and how you're going to set your shocks. So it's always evolving. You're always learning. I mean, you come back to a track that, over the winter, it's gotten, maybe if it's up in the north where the ground freezes, it's gotten bumpier when you come back the following year. So it's always an evolution every weekend.
Now, you have a rookie, Ed Jones, who was Indy Lights champion. How has he done in preseason testing, and how long would it take for him to, what we use term in our podcast, rattle Sebastian Bourdais' cage?
No, I think Ed's been great. I think he's, you know, he's done well in the off-season testing. We got more coming up here before Long Beach. We got three more days to do some in-season testing for him as well once the weather warms up north. I mean, it'll take a year or two. I mean, if you look at any of the Indy Lights drivers that have come out as champions, it takes them a year or two to realize what their true potential is. But he's starting out good and showing well right away. It's a very competitive field from front to the end. It's a very, very competitive field.
In terms of young American drivers, are there drivers you see on the horizon who are not in Indy Lights or below Junior Series you think that could be the next superstar of American racing?
We're always looking for that. We're looking for someone who can come in at the very beginning level and just dominate. I don't see anybody like that right now, but we're always watching for that. And sometimes a guy can step up into a more powerful car. He can do good in a 300-horsepower car and step into a 450-horsepower and do better. And those guys you wonder about, so you put them in a 700-horsepower car where they do even better. So it's very competitive. A lot of rules are in place to keep the fields together. But usually you can tell when a driver is going to have the skill to really succeed.
In all the years as a team owner, what drivers who have gone through your team impress you the most with their talent, and who are the most dedicated and committed to their profession? And if you like, you can also say who are the real big buttheads.
No, the second one's probably easier, but I'm not going to answer that one. I think Justin was great. He was very dedicated to it. Very serious about it. Sebastian, I think, is, if I had to pick one that's the best, I think I'd pick Sebastian. I think he's been very serious. We were very happy to bring him back several years ago. He went to Formula One, and maybe he didn't get a fair shake there. I don't know for sure. But he was anxious to come back, and we brought him back, and he's been here ever since, and back with us again this year. So he's very serious about what he does.
Great. Okay, on your team's website, Boy Scouts of America is listed as one of the partners, and this I'm quoting from what it says on the website. This has allowed BSA exposure on an international scale and allowed Dale Coyne Racing to benefit from the support of millions of scouts and their families. Can you expand a little bit on this, please?
That's kind of a just a relationship we built several years. I think this is our sixth or seventh year with them this year. And we've kind of given them the platform to do lots of things. First, it started with scouting, and you know, there's all these scout camps during the Indy 500. There's all these scouts all across the country that are watching the race and cheering for their car, and that's exciting. And they've used it for fundraising with a lot of donors that have come to the races. So it's been a really good relationship.
Great. Okay, finally, first of all, I thank you so much for your time. Mm-hmm. How about a message for our listeners? We have listeners all over the world.
Well, we're excited to have Sebastian Bourdais back. I hope that the world watches our racing, because I think it's a very good product on television, and hopefully we're in the winner's circle a few times this year.
Okay, all the best to you, and thanks again.
Thank you.
Very nice to meet you.
Thank you.
Dale, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Back to Nasser. Okay, we've got Australia. It's going to be exciting. My question to you is, will we see the camping chair or not?
You know, Clark, if we see in the first race, that's going to be very sad.
Exactly. And the camping chair, they have to be orange this year, right?
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
So at least they... And you know, if McLaren was smart, start putting some logos on the camping chair, so that way the sponsorship doesn't get too disappointed.
Yeah, you know, this big French phone company... Orange, you call it Orange or something like that. If you remember, they used to sponsor Aero.
I remember.
I think McLaren should approach them.
Very good, very good. But yes, we'll see if the camping chair comes out. But I say, I don't know. It could be a Vettel weekend. They look good. And let me interrupt real quickly. Mercedes is bringing already a Spec 2 engine because Ferrari made them nervous. They're bringing Plan B, and we don't know how dependable... Well, Mercedes is pretty dependable. I don't even know why I say that. But still, I have a Vettel feeling in my heart.
I think it will be Vettel, Ricciardo, or Lewis Hamilton.
I think it'll be Vettel, Kimi Raikkonen, and Max Verstappen.
Oh boy, if LCH is not even on the podium and the car is still running at the end.
Correct.
We have a problem.
Bravo, bravo. Oh, no. Bottas is going to take LCH out on the first lap.
Yeah.
Love. It's going to be fun.
The race is very awkward time for me. But, of course, I'm going to set the alarm and wake up whatever time it is. What time is California time?
I have no clue. I haven't even looked. But I believe...
like 9 or 10 p.m.?
Well, why don't we... let me look at my smartphone real fast and see what it says. But I believe it's on Saturday morning. Saturday morning, 10 a.m. 10 p.m. Pardonnez-moi.
Yeah, that's what I thought. 10 p.m. So it's going to be like 1 o'clock my time.
Correct. So that's pretty good for you.
Yeah, that's fine. I'll suffer for one race. Actually, I will not suffer. I will enjoy it very much.
Absolutely. I'm going to enjoy it too. And it's going to be fun to see how Fernando reacts on the sidelines.
Yeah, I do want to say something. You know, I do watch a lot of YouTube during the off-season. I came across something that I hope some of our listeners may be interested in. There is a very nice, I believe it's a BBC documentary on Colin Chapman and what went down with John DeLorean fiasco and all that. It's very well done. A lot of interviews with Lotus people, different drivers. So if anybody is interested, I think it's like part one, part two, part three. And if you punch in, I don't know exact title of this broadcast, but if you punch in Colin Chapman, BBC documentary, it's posted up there in like three or four, parts. But a fantastic, fantastic coverage of what happened at Lotus.
Thanks, Nasser. Keep up the good work. I want to thank all the listeners who listened. Good night.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
But no one understands him but his woman,
John Shack.